In Kamaya, people were doing what they always did after an earthquake, tidying up. Among them was a farmer in his 60s named Waichi Nagano, who lived in a big house out in the fields. "I heard all the warnings," he said. "There was a loudspeaker car from the town hall going up and down saying, 'Super tsunami imminent, evacuate, evacuate.' There were a lot of sirens too. Everyone in the village must have heard them. But we didn't take them seriously." In the playground, the children were becoming restless. A mood of bored resignation had established itself. It was cold. People shared blankets and hand warmers. There was no sense of anything much happening, or that anything was likely to happen very soon. At 3:30 p.m., an elderly man named Katsuo Takahashi fled his home next to the river. He too had ignored the warnings until he became abruptly aware of the sea streaming over the embankment beside his house. It seemed to be coming from below the earth as well as across it. Metal manhole covers in the road were being lifted upwards by rising water. Mud was oozing up between the cracks that the earthquake had opened in the road. Takahashi directed his car towards the closest place of evacuation, the hill behind the school. On the main street of Kamaya, he saw friends and acquaintances standing and chatting. He rolled down his window and called to them, "There's a tsunami coming. Get out." He passed his cousin and his wife and delivered the same warning. They waved, smiled, and ignored him. Takahashi parked his car next to the school. As he climbed out and made for the hill, he became aware of a large number of children issuing forth from the school in a hurry. Among them was Tetsuya Tadano, who had remained in the playground with his class. Mr. Ishizaka, the deputy head, was absent from the playground. He reappeared suddenly. "A tsunami seems to be coming," he called. "Quickly, we're going to the traffic islands. Get into line and don't run." Tetsuya and his friend, Daisuke Kono, were at the front of the group. The traffic island was less than 400 meters away, just outside the village, at the point where the road met the new Kitakami Great Bridge. It was as he approached this junction, he saw a black mass of water rushing along the main road in front of him. Barely a minute had passed since he had left the playground. He was conscious of a roaring sound and a sheet of white spray above the black. It was streaming in from the river, the direction in which the children had been ordered to move. Some of those at the front of the line froze in the face of the wave. Others, including Tetsuya and Daisuke, turned at once and ran back the way they had come. The rest of the children were continuing to hurry towards the main road. The little ones towards the back were visibly puzzled by the sight of the older children pelting in the opposite direction. Soon, Tetsuya and Daisuke found themselves at the foot of the hill, at the steepest and most thickly forested section of the slope. At some point, Tetsuya became aware that Daisuke had fallen, and he tried and failed to pull his friend up. Then Tetsuya was scrambling up the hill. As he did so, he looked back over his shoulder and saw the darkness of the tsunami rising behind him. Soon it was at his feet, his calves, his buttocks, his back. "It felt like a huge force of gravity when it hit me," he said. "It was as if someone with great strength was pushing. I couldn't breathe. I was struggling for breath." He became aware of a rock and a tree and found himself trapped between them with the water rising about him. The darkness overcame him. Tetsuya Tadano came to on the hill, blinded by mud and with the roar of the tsunami in his ears. His limbs were immobilized with spars of debris and by something else, something wriggling and alive, which was shifting its weight on top of him. It was Kohei Takahashi, Tetsuya's friend and fifth-year classmate. Kohei's life had been saved by a household refrigerator. It had floated past with its door open as he thrashed in the water, and he had squirmed into it, ridden it like a boat, and been dumped by it on his schoolmate's back. "Help! I'm underneath you!" Tetsuya cried. Kohei tugged him free. Standing on the steep slope, the two boys beheld the scene below. Beyond Kamaya had been a succession of hamlets, and beyond them fields, low hills, the swaying curve of the river, and finally the Pacific Ocean. After the tsunami, the village, the hamlets, the fields, and everything else between here and the sea was gone. The water, which had receded, began to surge up the hill again. The two boys tottered up the slope. Tetsuya's face was black and bruised. In the churn of the tsunami, the ill-fitting plastic helmet that he wore had twisted on its strap and dug brutally against his eyes. His vision was affected for weeks. He could only dimly make out what was going on in the water below. Jorge's left wrist was broken and his skin was punctured by thorns, but his vision was unaffected. Whatever was visible of the fate of his school and his schoolmates, he saw it. He would never talk publicly about it. Only later would the full scale of the tragedy of Okawa Elementary School become clear. The school had 108 pupils. Of the 78 who were there at the moment of the tsunami, 74 of them and 10 out of the 11 teachers had died.